Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pembrey, and Marielle Smith. Join us on our writing journey.
Hi, Lou.
Hello. So, today we're talking a little bit about imposter syndrome.
Yes.
But we're going to start just with a bit of a personal update. So how's your week been?
I'm exhausted. That's how my week's been. Yeah.
We do have weeks like that, don't we?
Yeah, and I always forget that I'm human too.
This will remind you.
Yes. There's always this wall that you crash into and you're like, oh, wait. Yeah. Still not superhuman. Thank you for this clarification. Yeah. And I'm just tired. I'm just exhausted. And of course, I got my period. So that doesn't really help matters at all. So I haven't had a good week in terms of I'm usually quite, you know, shiny and happy and confident and positive about life. Not this week.
No.
And I was telling Andre, so that's my girlfriend, I told her 2 days ago, I messaged her because we still can't officially see each other because of lockdown. I messaged her, if I didn't know any better, I would say I was depressed. And she was like, what? And then she was like, okay, so what makes you say you're not depressed? And then I was like, actually, because I've been feeling like I'm not moving forward with things. And then I realized that is really just a voice in my head because I am still working on things. Yeah. So for me, that's the difference with being depressed. I'm still enjoying. So I'm not just doing things because I have to. Of course, I do also. There are always things I do just because I have to. But I'm also still looking forward to certain things. So I've still been writing. I am updating the inside of some of my tarot books, to sort of like finish up the branding. And I'm really enjoying that process. And for me, that's a sign that I'm just having one of those weeks.
Yeah. I was going to ask how it affected your writing this week.
Well, it came later in the week than usual. Because I try, one of the things, my weekend was a little crazy, and I like to, on Sunday night, sit with 52 weeks of writing and actually plan out and sort of like break down all my goals and then put them on my Kanban board and you know, just so I know this is what I'm going to do this week. And because my Sunday night wasn't free, and then like the week just started with, I need to do that. All these, you know, life just got in the way really badly. So we're recording this on a Saturday morning and I still haven't logged a 52 weeks of writing. So that's 6 days. So I feel like I haven't been as focused. So usually I plan fiction goals, I plan nonfiction goals, I plan marketing goals. And now I'm sort of like just doing whatever I feel like doing. So it affects me that I started writing later because there was so much upheaval the beginning of the week and a lot of stress. But I was actually surprised that I have been doing writing. So apparently even when I don't write it down, I'll still be drawn into it.
Do you think that sometimes it's a good idea to kind of not have those goals and just go with the flow?
That's a really good question. Now I'm thinking about it. This week was kind of like, you know, those weeks, some weeks are like smooth, right? And nothing crazy happens. And this week was just like one thing after the other. And so it was actually good that I didn't set really heavy goals. Yeah. Like I had a, I'm working on a I'm editing a novel for a client, so that was the only thing I planned in, because that's the only thing with an actual deadline.
Yeah.
So that's what I planned in, and the thing was, my week filled up anyway, because like there were lots of demands on my time. And not in a way, not in a I didn't set the proper boundaries kind of way, but in things that I actually want to be engaged in.
Yeah.
For example, we, the beginning of the year, I took two stray cats, kittens from the street that survived. We call it now the New Year's massacre. And we tried to socialize them and it failed. So we had to put them back on the street. So on Monday, I got a message of the people who are fostering them. And they had an outbreak of a very contagious disease amongst their other cats. They're in a different space in the house. So we were like, okay, we need to act quickly because this disease could spread.
Yeah, yeah.
So suddenly that needs my attention because, of course, I am not going to let this person, like I knew where I got the cats from. So I was like, if we're going to release them, I'm going to be there. There's no question.
Yeah.
And here it's like we're still working with the text messages. So you have to calculate, can I still go outside? Like, have I used all my messages?
Oh, so that was with the COVID.
With the COVID, yeah. So we can go outside twice a day. And if you send your two text messages, you're not supposed to go outside unless it's like a really emergency. And they don't consider animals here an emergency at all.
No.
So that's sort of like stress that I didn't expect. So it took me until Thursday night before I actually sat down with my fiction work. So that's how it affected. But I was really pleased to see that I was still actually, because I was ready to give up. I was like, fuck this week. And then I was just sitting on Thursday night thinking, let's just open Scrivener and see where I am. And I revised the scene.
But when you look back on the week, do you see what you accomplished?
That's my point, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it feels like I'm not moving forward or I'm not moving forward fast enough.
Mm.
And then I try to tell myself, but you're moving forward.
Yeah.
And not in a, I have to, sort of like a forced way, but more a, I really feel like opening this program and tweaking the inside of this book so I can upload the new version on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of, and I was like really happy to know. And for me that, like I said, when I texted Andre, like that's how I know I'm just having a really bad week. Yeah. Is because I'm still drawn to these projects.
Yeah.
I still want to spend time and sit with this project, not because I feel the rush, but just because I enjoy,
yeah,
like playing around with it.
Yeah.
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 So how was your week?
Well, it's been quiet in terms of writing, as in I've just done sort of slow and steady writing. The trouble is, my day job's been really busy and that takes away so much energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kept it within the boundaries of, you know, hours wise that you're putting into it. But it's still, you know, at the end of the day, you're still a little bit like, oh, you know, exhausted from the day. So it's difficult to kind of produce that creative energy, but I have been writing, and like you, I've been enjoying it. Of course, I haven't mentioned, you know, but I haven't mentioned to everyone else that so Anton died, our dog, on the 15th of February, and that had a big impact on how I was feeling, and I just couldn't be bothered with the goal setting and what have you, which is why I was asking you, do you sometimes feel it's okay to go with the flow of things? Because I felt that that's what I just needed to do at that time and not put additional pressure, you know. Well, I couldn't have, I couldn't have achieved anything. I didn't feel like I could. I could still write, but it had to be very much just how I was feeling, you know, as opposed to anything constructive. But
No, I was just like, if something like this happens and you're in the middle, depending on what you write, like let's say you write romance and you're in the middle of writing the first kiss, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And then this happens.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So did you write at all?
I did have some breaks. Yes, I did. But, and I did have some breaks, some days where I didn't write as well. I didn't write like in a journal or anything because that's very sporadic for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd worked on my fiction. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of outdoor stuff with Lily. So running and walking, and she's getting really muscly as well as she's still cuddly.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's good as well, right? Like I do that too. Like I force myself. Like I'm not a runner or anything, but I force myself out of the house.
Yeah.
Towards the beach. Just go for a stroll.
Yeah, that'd be nice. A beach. I remember beaches.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Let me lean back a little bit.
You can see it.
There's actually, from the height I'm sitting, no. I can see my pool.
That's so funny. It's so funny because we've been in snow this morning. Me and Lily, it snowed. And I'm just warming up and you're sat there near a beach.
I cannot go into the pool, though. It's freezing.
I feel like this lockdown, because we're in the middle of another lockdown. It's supposed to be easing soon at the end of the month, but you still can't really do anything.
We are the same. Yeah,
it's gone on forever.
I know. Ours started 8th of January.
Yeah, I don't know when ours started. It was probably about the same sort of time.
Yeah, and the thing is, the numbers are increasing again here anyway, and also, I feel like it's finally catching up with me. I'm finally sick and tired. I have a lot of anger this week. Like I said, I got my period. But I'm like, so I 2 days ago, I was at the beach and I was putting on my mask and I was like, I never sent a text message. So I'm like, that was the first time I left the house without sending a text. You get so used to it. Mm-hmm. But also the fear is no longer really in catching COVID for me because I don't actually see anybody. The fear is in running into the police and then being dicks about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I still see people. I still do visits. We interviewed last week, it was last Thursday. So that was kind of, I couldn't believe how enthused I felt afterwards, you know, just sitting in a room with people we're all wearing a mask and we're all distanced and we've had to fill in a risk assessment to actually interview people face to face. But it was, I don't know, it really gave me a boost. It gave me some enthusiasm for my job. It was amazing, just that contact.
Are you an extrovert?
No, I'm not at all. Not at all. No.
Imagine.
But I think it's just the months and months of kind of working. Yeah. Almost in isolation, not quite in isolation. And then that spending that day kind of talking about your work and your job because you're asking questions of people and they're telling you about. And just that focus on what we actually do and the outcomes for people was amazing. We do something called value-based interviewing as well, which is, you know, very much trying to ask people about their, you know, who they are. So it's you can't possibly come into an interview and not be honest about who you are and what you do.
That sounds good. So it's not, do you have questions like, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
No, not at all. The questions are more along the lines of, tell me about a time when you felt compelled to intervene to help someone. That was one of our questions.
Oh, but that's deep, but that says a lot.
Yeah, and you can't, as a, you know, answering that question, you can't lie. You can't make something up and say you saved a little old man from falling or something.
Because, well, I think you can lie, but I think you'll notice.
Yes. And the other thing is, I mean, then we follow it up with, how did it make you feel? Would you have done anything different? And you really just get to the heart of someone, because we're very much looking for people who are compassionate and, you know, willing to be very people focused. And our job is not, it's very holistic. You go in and you help, you sort out what needs sorting out, and your focus is on making people's lives better, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's like a from the heart approach.
Yes. Yeah. So you can employ someone who hasn't got the skills, but because you can teach them, but you can't employ someone who hasn't got the right attitude, because you can't change that.
No, I like that approach, because you hear it so often, like, it's only about the skills.
Yeah.
And you're right, like, you can teach people how to do things, but you cannot teach people what kind of attitude.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether you can teach people to be compassionate.
I'm not sure that you can. It would be a very difficult thing to do if it's even possible.
Yeah, I would think that's something you learn early on.
Yeah.
And to unlearn not being compassionate or empathetic.
Yeah.
I think that's very hard.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's easier to just teach them some skills.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, we do ask about the skills as well, but it's very weighted on the values, pass or fail sort of thing, whether you'd offer someone a job. And they have to score above a certain amount in the value section to be eligible for the job.
I really like that approach.
Yeah. And we did employ someone, and she was fab. She was really good.
Yeah. But I think in regular, because I have to admit, I haven't done a lot of job interviews in my life, because I somehow always roll into some things.
Yeah.
And of course, now I'm a freelancer, so now I don't have to do this anymore. But like, I'm an extreme introvert, and I have social anxiety. So if you put me in a job interview and you start firing those extremely standard questions at me,
yeah,
like, I'm just like, because I know they're not really relevant, really, for just because that's not the kind of person I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I will never perform well in those job interviews, but I think in a value-based job interview, I would do really well.
Yes, I think you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if I have to sort of like, because I'm like that, I know what's important, and it's very difficult for me to muster enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Things that, yeah, I'm like, don't we all know that this isn't really what it's about?
Yeah.
And
it's so open that you can, because we very much say, for a lot of the questions, it's like you can use your experience at work, or you can use your personal experience. It's up to you. So It's very wide as to what you can choose to talk about.
Well, once I'm ready to create my empire and have to start hiring people, I'll come to you for advice.
For how to do the...
How to do it properly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before I start asking, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And like my thing would be, I don't really know. And not because I don't care, but because I know that life tends to throw you curveball after curveball. And sometimes you just have to ride it.
Yeah. I think I'd be like, I'll be retired. I'll just be writing somewhere on holiday, permanently on holiday.
You'll be here, probably on the island with the doggies. Yes. Yeah. I mean, we have gorgeous hills. Like, I can see them from... So I'm sitting in my office/bedroom, and one window faces the sea and the other faces the hills behind my village. And they're great for dog walking. Just saying, Lou. Everybody walks the dog there.
What more could I want?
Just saying. Well, if you're actually on the hills, that's the best view to the sea anyway.
I'd need to go swimming as well.
Yeah, you can. It's like it's 10 minutes by car from the hills to the sea.
And then we could do the podcast live with each other. Not live.
Yes.
Live.
But do realize that in 10 years' time, I'll still be working. So you have to sort of get used to my schedule. Because if I can retire in 10 years, that would be the definition of success. I think I'll be 44 by then.
Yeah, 10 years, I'll be 60, see.
Yeah, so you've earned it by then. I'm still...
I'll be eligible.
Yes, okay. So I actually think a lot of things that we've already discussed have overlap with imposter syndrome.
I agree.
Yeah. So do we want to explain a little bit that we've had a meeting, and because we see that there's often we want to discuss a certain topic and we realize there's so much going into the topic, and then we also don't want to make epic long episodes, so we often feel like we're rushing or we're not diving into something deeply enough, which is kind of funny since that's exactly what the title of the podcast is. Yeah. So Lou came up with the idea to pick like a theme and then see what elements or what aspects belong to that theme or what falls under that. And then we just make episodes on each of these aspects so we have the time to actually properly discuss it in depth.
Yeah, rather than rushing.
Yeah, so this is the first episode we're going to try to do that.
Yeah.
So we decided we wanted to start with the ever nice topic of imposter syndrome. Mm. So I think what I want to ask you, Lou, before we start thinking of all the elements or all the aspects that belong to imposter syndrome or that are sort of like overlapping or could be put under that same umbrella, I wanted to ask you how you would define imposter syndrome.
Oh, okay. So it's when you don't feel good enough. It's when you have an ideal of how you are supposed to be or act or what skills you're supposed to have, and you feel that you fall short. That would be my definition of imposter syndrome.
Okay, I'm just taking notes. I agree with you. It's for me as well. Imposter syndrome is that nagging voice that tells you you're not good enough, you don't have what it takes. And if you do have some success, it will tell you next time they're going to find out.
Yes.
Next time they're going to see right through you. You just got lucky this time. Yeah. It has nothing to do with your skill or you just, you know, you were lucky to run into the right kind of people. So you don't actually deserve this. You just got really lucky. This wasn't your hard work. It's luck and it can be taken away from you anytime now.
I'm just wondering if there's a difference in gender. So if men feel this as strongly as women do.
I know a lot of men writers who do, but I am now wondering, I don't have an answer straight away. I am wondering whether they experience it in different ways, or whether it's different aspects. Can I just, because it made me think of something. Do you know Brené Brown?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. So I remember, I don't know which book it was, but she was talking about something. She was sort of building up to a fight with her husband. She was talking about a shitty first draft. So the story that you tell in your head when something happens.
Yeah.
And you get really angry about it. And so she had this happening in her own head while she was swimming with her husband.
I love that. I'm totally with you, because I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So at one point, he admitted that he was afraid of failing as a father, not being there for the kids, not being able to protect him, et cetera, et cetera. So I think at that point she realized that they have, her husband anyway, has the same fear. It's just that's much more difficult for them to admit to it. And that can make like sort of like the toxic masculinity.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they lash out more because the contrast, the difference between, like, they have to suppress it so badly. So when it comes out completely thwarted. And it already comes out thwarted, I think, when we do it, because we suppress it as well.
Yeah.
But I think for men, it can become even more, because
because it's more socially acceptable for women to express themselves or to talk about their feelings, whereas men have to traditionally keep that inside and be brave and strong and infallible.
Yes, and I would say for me, it's not easy to talk about my feelings. So I can bottle it all up, and then when it comes out, it's completely distorted.
Hmm.
I have that sometimes. I'm much better at it now than I was years ago.
Yeah.
So imagine for men, because I'm actually supposed to know how to express my feelings and deal with them. So imagine what it's like because of the way society functions.
Yeah.
We still haven't smashed the patriarchy. For men, it's that much harder. So I'm not sure whether they have different. But I'm wondering whether they have the same fears, but the way it shows up is different for them, or the way they out it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have an answer to that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It just occurred to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you live with a musician.
Yes. Marcus he's not particularly masculine though. As in, he doesn't ascribe to all those aspects of masculinity that, you know, society puts on him. So he's not typical, I would say.
Okay. But does he have different, does he experience imposter syndrome differently than you do?
He definitely feels it, and we talk about it sometimes, especially when he's comparing himself to other musicians, you know, ones that he really respects or thinks are really talented. So it is something that we talk about. He doesn't, and that's what I mean, he does talk about his feelings. He doesn't see that as something he needs to avoid.
That's very good. So that actually, because that's something that I wrote down as I was thinking about imposter syndrome, is that comparisonitis can be such a trigger.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely an episode I want to do.
Yeah.
Talk about comparisonitis. So you would say that men will compare themselves with others as well.
Yeah.
They compare their art.
Yeah.
And their skills and their output with others. Yeah.
Yeah, or feel that they need, want to be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the saying, yeah.
Okay. So how does it show up in your life?
I was thinking about this, and it's something that, because I'm aware of it, I like to think that it doesn't have a massive impact on me. But it has a tendency to sneak up on you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I try not to do it, but sometimes it's impossible.
but this is why I said there was such an overlap, because when you feel down, and whether that's because your dog just died or you're processing a massacre of cats, right? And you have your period, that's when it sneaks up on you.
Yes, yes, it's true. When you when you've got your shit together, you're fine, aren't you?
But you can when you get your shit together and it pops up, you're just like, go back, you just kick it back to the curb where it came from.
Yeah.
But when you're sort of in that spiral of negativity, like, you know, you just, and then it kind of feels like it's sort of like it cracks its knuckles and goes like, haha, let me kick you when you're down.
Yes. I think I try to get around it as well, by doing things like not setting goals or avoiding expectations of myself. So that then I kind of feel that that's a way of avoiding dealing with the issues, because I suppose if you've not set goals, if you've not said, I'm a writer and I need to be professional, then you're not setting yourself up to that standard, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because you can't fail. So yeah. Their voice cannot go, yeah. See?
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm writing notes, because I think maybe at the end, when we're done with this series, I'm afraid it's gonna be a long series, our first series. Because I'm writing it down for strategies.
Yeah.
Just pretend you don't have goals to shush it.
Yeah.
But might actually be working.
Expectations of yourself.
Well, this is, of course, always like that. And this is something that I am really a fan of. And that's also, and you know that because you are working with 52 Weeks of Writing.
Yeah.
I'm very much about, part of the trick is learning realistic expectations. What is realistic for you?
Yeah.
So, of course, this is also where comparisonitis comes in.
Yes.
If you consistently compare yourself to somebody, let's say J.K. Rowling, right?
Yeah.
And I'm talking about her writing. I'm not talking about her persona right now. Yeah. Then it's you are setting yourself up for failure, right? So. It's all about, and sometimes, like, for a long time, actually, my definition of success was when I can buy a castle in Scotland too.
Yeah, okay.
And then, of course, at one point I realized I really don't want a castle in Scotland, because that's going to be cold and miserable, and it's going to be huge. And
it'll cost fortune to keep.
Yes, and I'm like, I would rather have a more... a realistic house, and then use all the other money that I have to save some more cats, right? That's what I'd rather do. So that's something, but I wasn't aware, because I just thought that's like success, you know, buying a castle. Then I'm like, yeah, but if I had that money, and I'm not saying that J.K. Rowling doesn't spend a lot of money on charities.
No.
Because she does. But if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't mind a big house, right? But that's just because I'm an introvert and I like space. I like space a lot. I don't want to hear people when I'm working. And I always work at home. I'm not a cafe writer. So, but yeah, I would definitely use that differently. So that made me change my goals. And that's already so freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also in the goals you set and the expectations that you have of yourself. And then the long-term expectations and the short-term expectations.
You know, when I think back to being a child, my parents didn't have very high expectations, but because of who they were, they just mm-hmm. didn't have, any expectation that you'd go to university, or they kind of wanted you to have a job, but they weren't, that bothered about what job you did and what have you, which was very freeing on the one hand, but it's also limiting in another way, because
I was just going to say
because it meant that, and I didn't have high expectations either.
So this is another topic that I know we want to discuss: limiting beliefs. And that's really one of my favorite topics in general. I love to talk about this. No, but as in doing this with my clients, going through these limiting beliefs, because they are often your childhood limit. Like I had the same, like I grew up in a very working class family. And even though my mother always said, you simply go for what you can achieve, right? So if you have options, pick the highest one you can go for, because that gives you opportunity. So like I know, when I was growing up, I had people that their parents did a certain level of education, and they would tell the kids, do the same, because otherwise you might run into a wall or something, right? Don't stretch yourself too much, because you might fail. My mother was always like, just aim for the sky. Because if you then decide that that's not the kind of life you want, at least you would have that. You will have had that kind of education, and it's worse if you have because of those limits around you, because of people not pushing you, you end up with a certain education, and later on in life you realize, actually I wanted to do that, but you missed a degree. So my mom was much more just shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
The castle in Scotland. I think she would rather have me on a castle in Scotland than on an island, because Scotland is closer. And I don't think actually my dad's from Scotland, but my mom's never been. So I do need to take her sometime. Completely different topic. So I do think that, like, I still have that sort of working class mentality, like the who am I? Who am I to actually reach for the stars?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I don't know about you, but I'm the first person in my family to go to university till this day. So I graduated 10 years ago. Till this day, I'm the only person who's ever gone to a university. And I didn't only just have my BA, I graduated with honors in my MA, and I did half of a PhD. And they just didn't understand what I was doing.
No. Which is, it's sort of nice in a way, though, isn't it? Because you don't have the pressure from them.
Yeah, but it's, I did get some pressure of like, so when are you finally going to do something something that we understand. So I think it can both be, like you said, it can both be freeing and it can be limiting. And I think it kind of depends on your disposition as a person.
Yeah.
Whether you take it as for freedom or you take it as.
Yes.
So yeah, I definitely want to talk about limiting beliefs, because they are so often like my mom telling me when I was younger and I said, I want to be a writer. And she said, well, good luck bringing home the bacon with that. And then me just going like, really? Okay, so that's not it. I'll become a marine instead or something.
Yeah.
That's like, you start thinking much more practical.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk about that as well, because I think imposter syndrome, the things it tells you, those are those limiting beliefs, the things it whispers in your ear. It's really useful to sit with the question, how does imposter syndrome show up in your life? Like when does it show up in your life? And how, so what, how does it manifest itself? And then a deeper one would be, what's the kind of things it's telling you? Because I think that's the key to learning where those voices came from.
So if you want to let us know any answers to that.
Yes. Yeah.
Truthfully, Facebook or the website are the best places to find us. Not so much Twitter, but we are on there.
Yes, we are.
Okay. So bye for now.
Bye, Lou.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.